Of the yard, she felt her heart seize with terrible understanding. John O'Donoghue, his thick forearms scar-speckled from ironwork, heaved Martin over his shoulder so that Peter was able to lift Nora out of the mud. Both men were dark-eyed with grief, and when Nora opened her mouth to scream and found that she had choked on it, they bowed their heads as though they hurt her anyway. Peter wrested the chicken feed from Nora's clenched fists and kicked the clucking hens from the doorstep. Placing her arm around his shoulders, he led her back inside the cabin to sit by the hearth where her grandchild, Micheál, was sleeping in the unfolded settle bed. The little boy, his cheeks flushed from the heat of the turf fire, stirred as they entered, and Nora noticed Peter's eyes flicker to him in curiosity. John followed them inside, his jaw clenched with the weight of Martin's body, and his boots tracking mud over the packed clay floor. Grunting with the effort, he laid Martin on the bed in the small sleeping quarter off the main room. Dust from the disturbed straw mattress rose into the air. The blacksmith crossed himself with deliberate precision, and stooping under the lintel, murmured that his wife, Áine, would be there soon, and that the new priest had been fetched. Nora felt her throat close over. She rose to go to Martin's body in the bedroom, but Peter held her wrist. "Let him be washed," he said gently. John cast a troubled look at the boy and left without saying another word, shutting the half door behind him. The dark rose.
"You saw him fall, did you? Saw him yourself?"
Nora's voice sounded strange and small. She gripped Peter's hand so tightly her fingers ached.
"I did," he murmured, looking at Micheál. "I saw him in the fields and raised my hand, and I saw him fall down."
"There was a need for those ditches. He told me yesterday there was a need for them to be dug. So the rain..."
Nora felt her husband's death creep over her until she began to shake with it. Peter draped a greatcoat over her shoulders, and she could tell from the familiar smell of burnt colt's foot that it was Martin's own. They must have brought it back with his body.
"Someone else will have to finish those ditches," she gasped,
rubbing her cheek against the rough frieze.
"Don't be thinking of that now, Nora."
"And there will be the thatch, come spring. It needs thatching."
"We'll all be taking care of that, don't you worry now."
"And Micheál, the boy."
Alarm ran through her, and she looked down at the child, his hair copper in the firelight. She was grateful that he slept. The boy's difference did not show so much when he was asleep. The keel of his limbs slackened, and there was no telling the dumb tongue in his head. Martin had always said Micheál looked most like their daughter when asleep.
"You can almost think him well," he had said once. "You can see how he will be when the sickness has passed, when we have him cured of it."
"Is there someone I can fetch for you, Nora?" Peter asked, his face splintered with concern.
"Micheál, I don't want him here."
Her voice was hoarse.
"Take Micheál to Peg O'Shea's."
Peter looked uneasy. "Would you not have him with you?"
"Take him away from here."
"I don't like to leave you alone, Nora. Not before Áine is with you."
"I'll not have Micheál here to be gaped at."
Nora reached down and grabbed the sleeping boy under his armpits, hauling him into the air in front of Peter. The boy frowned, eyes blinking, gummed with sleep.
"Take him. Take him to Peg's, before a soul is here."
Micheál began to squall and struggle as he hung from Nora's grip. His legs tremored, rashed and dry-looking against the bone.